Fan Morning Show, 4759 of the Fan. When is enough enough? You know, like when is enough enough with our next guest? Like it just, there's, I don't know how many times my face is going to be on the face of another person. I don't know who the Brooklyn Brawler is. I'm sorry, but it's like, I'm guessing it's a horrible heel. I Googled him briefly during a break, and the article that came up said he had a 36-year career or something like that. And I went, what?
Worse than a heel. The guy that nobody cares about gets no reaction either way.
So that, wow. Stewie, that's harsh, buddy. Like, honestly, you've done me dirty face swap game many times, but to have me be someone that's just can't get a reaction either way, that's death in this business.
The parallel between you and the Brooklyn Brawler was the Brooklyn Brawler used to talk the most crap. I'm coming in and I'm going to do you up next week. You're done. And then you get pummeled and killed in about 22 seconds. So I think he has the worst record. So the definition of the Brooklyn Brawler was jobber. So you're not a jobber, but you talked a lot of crap. But when push came to shove, you're going through the table, bro.
Well, in what regard? I was going to say, like, are we wrestling? You just cut a promo. You're like, you're going through the table, brother. I'm like, wait, when did I sign up to wrestle Stewie? I renege on this contract. There's no way that I'm doing this. Have you guys ever seen Stewie's fight highlights? Like, no way. Have you seen Stewie's hands? I've worn his jacket before, and it was like the biggest. It's like, what, triple XL? Like, it was, I don't know what it is. But it was a dress on me.
It was Homer Simpson's muumuu. It was Homer Simpson's muumuu. Yeah, that's what it was.
One time I left the studio.
What's his name? Set the tone.
Who set the tone?
No, I was going to say that Will Smith has set the tone now, where you have to start backing up your words. You got to be careful because someone could be walking into that studio. Great. You know, you saw that security gate. It's been pretty lax lately here. You got to be careful what you're saying.
Okay. Why are you threatening me twice? You just doubled down on. So
you, I'm not saying me.
Yeah, I hope not you, because it's scary. Like, I don't want to fight you.
I live in Markham. Yeah. Do you see these gas prices? I'm not driving downtown from
Yeah,
Markham.
I know, but now, now you're like, oh, you know what? You're going through a table. Not me, but somebody. And now you're even being like, hey, the security. You're like outlining the blueprint for the building for people to come assault me unprovoked over what take? What is the take that I'm talking and giving trash that has you Brooklyn Brawler memeing me and inciting violence? You're like Trump with the Capitol building. You're like, I had nothing to do with it. But if you went down there and smacked JD, you know, like, wouldn't be the worst thing. But I'm not a culpable for this.
Just try to keep you accountable. Keep you on your toes. That's all I'm trying
to do. Yeah, no, great. No, it's great. It's really great. So your buddy, I think maybe you're mad at me because I said that maybe Wayne Simmonds wasn't going to play anymore and that his career might be done. And he had a good game last night. He stepped in the lineup. But how do you think he just feels right now with, like, the up and down nature of this? There's rumors that Matthew Knies could come and be occupying a spot. There's rumors that the other kid, Abruzzese, could end up getting a game on Saturday, even though we spoke to a scout yesterday that told us, hey, doesn't seem like he's overly NHL ready. Kyle Clifford's battling for a spot. There really does seem to be a battle for who's going to play for the fourth line. And yeah, we know what Wayne Simmonds can bring from a leadership standpoint, from a locker room standpoint, but just in terms of, like, his temperament right now, how he's feeling right now, you're obviously checking in with the guy. What is he going through as he battles for his spot?
Well, the one thing I can say that Wayne Simmonds is a very, very prideful player, and you don't get to 1,000 games by just, you know, going through the motions. You know, he's played the game hard, he plays it tough, and he wants to play every single night. And, you know, this is the market where the microscope seems to shift, where it's even shifting on Spezza, where, you know, a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, we're talking about giving him the keys to the city and extending him for another 2 years. So I think right now it's just about, you know, when things are going tough, the market, it just sort of shifts the microscope right now. But the one thing I can say with the fourth line, there's got to be black and white. It can't be a gray area. So the makeup of this team, it's a puck possession team. So you can't go and say, well, you know what, top two lines of middle six, you know what, we're going to puck possess, but you guys on the fourth line, you better chip and dump the puck. That is a team system. And if you want the most out of your fourth line, you got to find a way to adjust the system to their liking. This is not a puck possession team. You saw Simmonds yesterday when they said, hey, you know what, we want you to go out and kill everybody. Hit, hit, hit. He had 5 hits last night. And you saw that element that hit that Wayne brought. He hammered a couple guys, some big, big hits. Clifford was out there too. That is the playoff hockey that the Toronto Maple Leafs need to play in their bottom six. So, you know, for everyone to say, well, you know what, he's done. As the Wayne train left the station for the final time, again, he's a guy that if you put him in a role, you give him the ice time and tell him exactly what you want, you're going to get that out of him. Is he a 25 and 25 guy anymore? No. But he can come in. He's the guy in the third period when you're down a goal or in overtime scoring that big goal going to the net. That is who he is. You just need to get that message through. This is exactly what we want. So that's not really giving any inside scoop to what's going on with the Leafs, but that's what I'm seeing from an outsider with that fourth line. Tell them what you want. Tell them what you want, dude.
Yeah, it feels like they got an identity last night that is a playoff type mentality. And if they're going to try to get further in the race this time around, they're going to need that physicality. And he certainly brought it, but someone that has been shuffling around as a William Nylander. And last night he obviously had quite the response. He played one of his, best games in terms of production as well. What are you liking about maybe him being pushed a bit to produce and to be the guy that needs to show up, not just at the playoffs? And is that a kind of a testament to someone that maybe holds on a little bit and waits for the big moments to shine? Or is he just one of those players that we'll never understand?
Well, again, he's still, and I don't want to say he's still trying to figure out his game, but that is part of teams that are trying to make that push. You got to have accountability within your team, and if it's just lax and you just let guys slide with certain things, you're not going to get the most out of them. So kudos to Keefe to really calling him out. But he's that guy that when it gets like one step before, hey, we're going to have a big, big problem, that's when he, scores the big goal. And, I was watching the game last night, obviously, on Sportsnet, and they mentioned that, he had an awful month. He's not playing well. And Sheldon, goal by Nylander. And then a goal the next shift by Nylander. So it just seems that at the final moment where you're really going to have that stern talking to, he steps up and has a big game. So I think that is sort of the enigma of him, where you see what he can do. He can turn a game around in a 3-4 shift segment. You want to see that consistency, right? But again, it comes back to the market. It's, well, he's having an awful month, and you go and you check the stat sheet, it's 14 points in 14 games. So yes,
you're so afraid of the Willie defenders on Twitter. Like, look at you go, you're like, oh,
well,
it's the market.
Dude, I took the lashing. I lost the battle of Nylanderia, so I'm not. I can't.
Yeah, now you bend the knee and you're like, oh, Nylander guys.
But yeah, you want more. You want more. Yeah. You want more. You want to see more because you're just seeing how dominant this guy can be. And for this team to go and make a playoff run, you need to see that consistently. So, I want to see more. I understand it. But you're looking at teams like Calgary where, Sean Monahan, you're not going. You're on the fourth line. And I'm going to chirp you in the media. I'm going to chirp you to your face. But that is the making of a good team where you're holding your top players accountable, and it's no different with Nylander.
Stewie, do you put any stock in terms of the accountability, not only verbally, but you play him on that third line and you don't change the deployment with Camp and Engvall all that much? You're still putting them out there in the kind of minutes and situations that they were in with Mikheyev, and that kind of forces you, if you're William Nylander, to play on the defensive side of the puck, to play in your own zone a little bit. Do you think that there's any element of, hey, you're getting this guy going as a two-way piece and that's helping with the offense, or is he always going to be kind of an offense first guy for you?
Well, I'm trying to think of the saying. It's easier. What is it? You can't paint stripes on a cat with this, but for him, he sort of is who he is. So I think it's up to, the coaching staff to surround him with players. Hey, if his defensive numbers are lagging a little bit, okay, well, you got to pair him with some guys that are sort of going to complement him there, because he might be cheating a little bit on the back check. So you got to get him with a guy who's underlining to say, hey, this guy gets back on the back check. So I think for him, this is what you're going to get. It's not like we're talking about 21-year-old William Nylander. He's been a veteran now in the National Hockey League for many, many years. But I think right now it's about taking that next step and winning a playoff series and going to the Stanley Cup Finals. And you need to have that consistency. And you're looking at some of all the other top players in the National Hockey League. this is not an issue. It's not an issue. You're looking at the Braden Points and the Kucherovs and you know, the McKinnons. Like, these guys show up every single night, every single shift, and that's a pleasure to watch, and that's what makes them superstars. So I think with Nylander, he's a star. But for him to get into that superstar realm, he's got to be consistent. But that's one of the hardest things as a pro. You know, I would have one good game, and then I'd have three, and then I'd sit in the press box for three, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, I got to play good now. So it's tough. It's an inner battle. But at the end of the day, the numbers don't lie. He's having a decent offensive season. But for him to have success and the team to have success in the playoffs, they need a little bit more.
Yeah, and not only a decent offensive season, a career best already in point total. If you're Sheldon Keefe, are you tempted at all to try Nylander back on the second line once now that he's going a little bit, just to see if that can click again? Or do you ride this three-line setup as long as it's working?
Well, say what you want. I think this was the best, you know, that you've seen the four lines play, you know, collectively in a while, right?
Definitely.
And, you know, I know JD's a Kerfoot hater. I don't want to see him anywhere in the top six, but he's been one of the most consistent forwards, I think, for the
I'll take my chances. I'll take my chances, you know, just because if I can just get one, it's worth it. You know, I'll wake up in the hospital, right? But I'll know that, you know, that one shot, like, it was,
no,
I needed to do it.
Baba,
like,
get the tables.
Hand,
Baba,
you know?
Get the tables.
Yeah. Stewie, you know what's going to happen here?
Yeah.
You know those tag matches when the one guy's a coward and, like, like they go to fight and then he immediately tags in his partner?
Yes.
That's going to be JD. He's going to run you down in a promo, get ready to fight you, and then immediately turn and tag me in, and then I'm going to eat the beating while JD talks smack.
Yeah. Then the lights go out. Then the lights go out. Then he comes and hits me with the table, and I'm out cold. Right? That's or the chair.
Oh,
that's
God, my dream.
Doesn't put
my
you
dream.
Through. He lifts up the table and hits you with it. It's a very funny visual.
But anyways, back to business here. And you know, for Nylander, it's not about the lines. And I think it comes back to, and I'm pointing the fingers at the media, it shouldn't matter. He had success. He had two goals and one assist last night too. But for me, you know, I wouldn't care if I was on the fourth line as long as I got my second power play minute. So I don't think he really cares as long as he's putting up his numbers and he's on that top unit on the power play. And that's where he really gets to be creative. So I really like him playing with Kamp and Engvall. They have speed. Those guys have pace. You know, they get it on the forecheck, and it gives him and creates a little bit more space for him too. But Mikheyev has been doing well as well. So and I also wanted to tell JD that I think your check is in the mail from Mikheyev's agent, because I saw that tweet last night saying, hey, he's going to get paid. Dubis is going to ban you from Harbor 60, but I think you're going to get the check from the agent.
Yeah, I can't afford to eat there anyway unless I get the check from the agent. So it's kind of like one of those, you know, cat and mouse, I don't know, chicken egg situations anyway. So who cares? But no, he's obviously getting paid, man. He can play. He skates, and now he can finish around the net. And he's a unique player, right? Like, one of the things that you really grow to appreciate when you watch as many sports as we do, right, is guys that stand out, guys that stick out, that aren't just, you know, out there to be the average third, fourth line guy. And Mikheyev he's someone who can play up your lineup, he can play down your lineup, and there's just like a bar of what you're going to get from him, right? Like, there's a floor to his play, and the floor is high. And when you look at the ceiling with the skating ability and what he's been able to do shorthanded and now playing with Tavares, you're looking at the ceiling, and you're going to be able to talk yourself into it. So I just think that with free agency, we always see contracts like this. When you see his comparables, coming into this year, I just think that people would have thought Mikheyev around, you know, in the two ranges, maybe up to the three would have been it. I think the number will start with a four. That's just my guess. I don't have any inside information on it. It's just using comparables, but that's where I think he's going to be at moving forward. But do you just keep the lines the way they are then, Stewie? Like, it sounds like that's what you're saying, is that you just like it. What they had last night is what you'd be rolling with into the playoffs.
Yeah, and that accountability goes both ways. They had a good night too, and I know Blackwell had a good night the other night, and he's out. But again, this team has looked pretty well. I know it's a small sample size, but I think you go with this unit until they falter. And that accountability goes both ways. So if you have now fourth line guys that have a decent game, Clifford fought, Wayne had a good game with five hits, and you're saying, guys, you're out. Well, that accountability is going to be like, well, why do I need to perform if it doesn't matter, because I'm going to end up in the press box eating popcorn? But you know, just the stability. You know, they were down 2-1, but they came back tied at 2-2. And just the stability where that game wasn't in question, where in games past and segments past, you know, they're up a goal, you're like, they're looking kind of shaky. So Shulgren, I wasn't a big fan of the first two goals, but they stabilized. Yeah. and they weren't in any risk of losing the game, where after that Winnipeg game the other night, I thought they were going to come to Toronto, and I'm like, it could be a 4-2 game, 5-2 game for Winnipeg, because Toronto could catch them sleeping. But I like this makeup of the lineup because everybody complements each other, but this was the best game for that fourth line in a while. Give them a couple leeway, a little bit of leeway, because these are veteran guys, and you got to throw them a bone once in a while if you want them to perform. So, yeah, I understand Blackwell scored the other night, but, hey, wait till the other guys falter, and then you'll get the most out of those bottom six and bottom three guys as well.
Yeah, I'm with you a little bit right now. I do think that Blackwell can get back in, and the fourth line is going to be continuously like sort of tryouts heading into the postseason, even though there was something to their game last night. And this is my last one, and this is actually, I'm going to go back to Wayne Simmonds. But you would reference, I just realized something as we were talking about this when you said the five hits last night is, okay, there was a topic we had where you had mentioned coming into the season when Wayne was looking really good about how his approach to the offseason was very different and his approach to the beginning of the season was a little different, where he was going, listen, I'm not going to put as much wear and tear on the body with the physicality early because I want to be able to last for the course of the regular season. He throws five hits last night. Do you think this is a case now where maybe you can see some uptick in physicality from him down the stretch? Like he's going to be able to get back to that root of his game. It reminds me a little bit of the only thing is it goes both ways, because it reminds me of Roethlisberger a couple of years ago, where everyone went like, oh, Big Ben is actually better than this. He's not afraid to take contact anymore, but he's waiting for the playoffs. But then we got in the playoffs and Big Ben looked the exact same, where he was getting rid of the ball too early and he was afraid to take contact.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a little bit about Wayne Simmonds' history, especially in Philadelphia Flyers. Like, you know, he was supposed to get surgery and, you know, sort of rest his body because he had a multitude of ailments where, like, he should have got surgery and took the time off, but he wanted to perform so bad for this Philadelphia Flyers team that they told him, like, hey, you know, we really want you to play and, you know, we'll take care of you. And, you know, he came in, he played, he got more injured. And when it was time to get his $50 million, the contract that they gave JVR, they're like, well, you're always injured. But they told him, like, hey, we'll take care of you. Don't worry, play. So he put his body on the line where it cost him $50 million. He was supposed to sign that seven. He was supposed to sign that exact deal that they gave JVR. But, well, you know what? You're hurt all the time. But that's the type of player that he is. He sacrifices for his team. And that's why, you know, I want to see a little bit more respect on his name sort of with the articles, because this guy is a warrior. And this is a guy in the playoffs. You tell him what you want, you'll get exactly that. If you say, hey, you know what? After round two, we need to have you have three goals, 30 hits, and two fights, he'll do it. So that is sort of how you need to, you know, treat some of the veteran guys in the league. And I think that's sort of the style right now with the younger coaches. It's like, well, you know, you're going to do things my way or the highway, and you got to figure it out. But with veteran guys, and that's the one thing in the league I think people don't understand, is that respect factor. You have to show that respect. And again, these guys like Wayne Simmonds have put their body on the line. You got to put a little bit more respect when dealing with them too. And the same thing with Spezza. This guy was a superstar in the National Hockey League. So for him to be reduced to, you know what, let's, you know, put him out to pasture, see, you know, he's done. Again, these are the guys that help get you to. They don't get you through. They help get you through. So I think just find what you want out of them, tell them, explain it, and I think you'll get that out of them.
You know, Stewie, this is my ninth year in radio, and maybe you should put a little respect on my name when you come on here, threaten me going through tables in the crowds, just showing up at work. Like, you know, I get people through too, you know, like I get people through too.
I got your back. Yeah, you know, right, I have the memes ready for anybody that comes at you. Anyone that comes at you other than me, you know,
you have the memes. I'm not worried about the memes when you're telling people to go through security and smack the crap out of me. Like, that's, you're like, oh, don't worry, buddy.
I'm going to see you walking out of work today. You're going to be looking like the Pink Panther, just sort of creeping down the corner of the wall.
Stewie, always fun, man. Always good when you come on. Thanks for doing it.
All right, thanks a lot. Go Leafs, go.
Cheers, pal. Anthony Stewart, inciter of violence. We do this a lot with the Raptors, where we go, they're the team nobody wants to play. And I believe that to be true. I don't think people want to play the Raptors, especially right now. Like, you got to think about Celtics and Sixers. There's some questions about vaccination status. And all of a sudden, if you don't have your full complement of players and you're going to go play the Toronto Raptors, boy, you could be in tough. You might not get out of that series. And I feel the same way about the Leafs right now, honestly. Like, I just look at them and go, we always fret about what the matchup should be. Oh, is it the Bruins? Is it the Lightning? Who's the team? If you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, you think they want the reward of the season to be playing the Leafs in a seven-game series, or the Bruins for their reward to be the Leafs in a seven-game series? Like, the Leafs just beat the brakes off of the Bruins. They just beat the Florida Panthers. They're, to me, right now, the second-best team in the Atlantic. You give the credit to Tampa because they're defending Stanley Cup champions, of course. But right now, the Leafs are the second-best team. They're rolling. Those other teams are, too. They're winning games, but you're giving the edge to the team that just won in the fashion that they just won in. Leafs look great. And the idea that we're kind of looking at these matchups and saying, not that one, not that one, I guarantee you that the Bruins would rather play the Florida Panthers and that the Florida Panthers would rather play the Bruins and vice versa. That all these teams in the hockey, Carolina, whoever, pick a team, Tampa, Toronto is at the very bottom of the list of teams that I think they want to play.
I think the biggest thing is they're peaking at the right time and they're winning games in various fashions. You know, they're having comeback wins. They're winning on the road in tough barns to play at. They're beating teams handedly. They're having tight games and they're doing this
they're
all without
leads.
Exactly. And they're doing it with a goaltending that is shaky, to say the least.
Suspect.
And it's all suspect. And I think that that shows a lot of growth from a team. Yes, they're losing games to teams that they shouldn't be losing, but I think it's important to look at how they are winning at this time in the season against teams that really matter when you're trying to evaluate if they're going to have a better postseason. And I think that that is exactly why they would be a very difficult team to play against, and they're proving that like right now when it matters, before the playoffs, where it really matters.
And again, we're going to get another good look at that next week with the Florida Tampa back-to-back on the road. And you know, back-to-backs are what they are, and it might be Jack Campbell's first or second game back. Like, it's not going to be a perfect sample, but you look and you know, statistically, analytically, Florida is the strongest team. They have a monster goal differential. They've really haven't hit many bad spurts, but you beat them a second time in this, you know, we talked all season about, hey, you play Florida and Tampa and Carolina a bunch in the final month of the season. It's going to be a really good tune-up, and it's really going to let us know where you are heading into the playoffs. Next week's huge. Should be a lot of fun. That's Monday, Tuesday, of course. They also play Saturday in a game. I don't know. I don't care as much about the Philadelphia Flyers as I do those Florida and Tampa games. Toronto Raptors are back in action tonight.
Hot take.
And they'll welcome Kyle Lowry back on Sunday. To help us contextualize that, talk a little bit about Kyle, talk a little bit about his lasting legacy here in Toronto, is a former teammate of Kyle Lowry, CJ Miles, former Raptor sharpshooter, with us next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Give them a follow at their names on social. Subscribe to this podcast. Rate, review, all that good stuff. The Fan Morning Show. Wherever you get your podcasts. That's the end of my aux cord. After we talk to our next guest, we'll see if you guys got the theme of it. But I doubt it, given the excitement with which Ailish got it wrong earlier. Joining us now, former Toronto Raptors guard, all-around good guy, CJ Miles. CJ, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I have it on good authority that one of your lasting impacts on the current Toronto Raptors is when we look at how much thigh guys like OG and Scotty are showing. I don't know. I might have heard you're into your short shorts era as a dad now.
I've been there for a while, but yeah.
So you look at this Toronto Raptors team, and Kyle Lowry is coming back Sunday. Obviously, you got to play with Kyle for a little bit while you were a Raptor. How much do you see this meaning to Kyle as a player to come back? And it's been, you know, it's been a long time since he's been in Toronto anyway with the crowd. But this moment for him, knowing him a little bit and knowing how much the fan base appreciates him, what do you think that's going to be like?
I mean, I think it's just, I mean, obviously I can't speak completely for him, but from me looking and watching and seeing what he means to the city, but also seeing what the city means to him, you know, he became Kyle Lowry in Toronto. Like, he obviously he was a great player and he scrapped his way through to get there, but he became, his legacy is there. Like, the weight of his career is there, you know what I mean? And all the blood, sweat, and tears that he put in there to build up to this, to the mountaintop, basically. Like, you know, to be the first to ever do something in a space and be able to accomplish the things he accomplished with the route he had to take is amazing.
Yeah, so Kyle kind of came into his own here, like you said, that growth of as a leader over the years. And I know you were only here for a year and a half of that, but you were kind of a vet on the – not kind of, you were a vet on the team alongside him. When you came into the Raptors environment in 2017, 2018, what was that like for you to play off as – I know you're more of a kind of quiet leader and like take guys aside and that kind of stuff. I remember Alfonso McKinney telling me that you gave him a whole bunch of extra shoes because you guys were the same size, stuff like that. But what was the leadership dynamic like when you come in and you know, you and Kyle are the only 30-year-olds in the room really trying to lead that young group of guys?
I think as a tandem, we're really good because we're different in the way we do things. But as far as like leading, like he's a little bit more outspoken than me, as we know. But stepping into it, for me, stepping in, it was easy because like we had a mutual respect for each other. We've both been around for a long time. Same with him, DeMar, Serge, like the veteran guys that have been around. Like basketball was even easier because we knew what each other had done. We had scouted each other, played each other, and then personality-wise, I just kind of let it happen. I like to watch and listen and kind of like just kind of figure out what's going on before I try to put my handprint on anything. But it was great to see the way him and DeMar had their hands on the way everything was going. The guys, the young guys are already influenced so much by those two guys, especially Kyle with the guards and then everybody, and then the other guys, the wings, and watching DeMar and the way he worked, those guys really had a lot of respect for the amount of work that those guys put in to be who they were. And I think that was the biggest thing that I grasped right when I came in, was that you got two all-stars right here who are not afraid to know that they're going to need to give the keys to these guys at some point. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't thinking about, you know, them obviously to not being there, especially I don't think Kyle or DeMar ever wanted to leave, but they also knew that this game has done so much for us and there's so many things that we can teach guys under us to be able to do the same things for them.
So it's funny that you mentioned that, because this is something we were talking about earlier, CJ, is it's strange to look at this Raptors team and think about how competitive they are and how this season has gone in a way that a lot of us didn't expect, in that, hey, Scotty Barnes, a lot of people thought that he'd be able to play. I don't think a lot of people had him down for Rookie of the Year. A lot of people thought that Siakam could have a bounce back year and that he could be the guy on this team, but now he's looking like somebody who's all NBA. This team has sort of taken that step from the Kyle Lowry era and moved into this new group. And I wonder if you think that there is anything to the idea that, hey, like Kyle not being here, while he is obviously this incredible teammate, this leader that has those qualities where it's like he will step back, he will change his role to accommodate his teammates, that Siakam and Fred and some of these younger guys actually did need to have the team to themselves in order to take that next step.
100%. I mean, that's the last, because they have so much respect for him that they're still going to defer to him some, if you understand what I'm saying. Like, no matter what, because he's still Kyle Lowry, he's still Big Brother, he's still the guy who we've watched and learned from these last 3-4 years or whatever it may be. And I spoke on this before, like the other guys, Pascal, OG, Fred, especially those three, because those are the ones I spent the most time with, they have so much of the DNA from those guys that Kyle is still there. Like, he's very much still alive in that locker room. And so much of that is still a part of those guys. And they just been able to, since he's left, add their own, more of their own personalities on it, because now they feel the real weight of their responsibility. It's hard to feel all of it. It's like being in, I don't want to compare Kyle to like a dad or a big brother, but like having somebody teach you a bunch of things and still having them sit right beside you, you're never gonna try to take the wheel from them.
Yeah, and I think you see that especially with Fred. Fred's a finalist for the Twyman Stokes Teammate of the Year award this year. He's obviously the vocal and front-facing leader of the team. He's an all-star. Did you see that in Fred? Like, I know your 2017-2018 year with the Raptors, that's the bench mob year, right? That's the – you're the vet with DeLon and Fred and Jakob and Pascal, and all those four guys have gone on to do such big things. Did you see this for them in that bench mob year?
1,000%. Sometimes I hate the term bench dad because it makes it seem like I molded these guys. And all I really did was encourage them. That was the biggest thing that I did with them, was encourage them to be what I saw, what the coaching staff saw, what the other vets saw. But I just had so much time with them because I was in that unit. So we did so many drills together. We ate dinners together. We practiced together. I'd get there before practice and be like, hey, you want to shoot? Come on, let's do this before practice. And we spent so much time together that they just started to believe what we already believe. But they already had so much talent and so many attributes that we knew could grow even more. I told Pascal, which is crazy, a couple months after I met him, that he was going to be who he is now. I just planted the seed. I said, you are a corner three-pointer shot away from this, 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 and this. And then when we got to that, we built on the next thing. You know, like I just kind of slowed it down. You don't have to do everything at one time. And then Fred was always Fred. Fred just needed the opportunities. And Fred was Fred the next year when they won the championship, obviously. Like he showed it right away.
So CJ, and we're talking to CJ Miles, former Toronto Raptors guard, and as you said, bench dad. I would never call you that with the bench mob. Never.
I thought absolutely. It was because you were going to say because it made you sound old, not because it made you seem like you were getting credit. Like that was a zigzag. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
That definitely was the thing too. I was 32 years old. Like
yeah.
I hadn't even had my own kid yet.
Yeah, 32, like bench grandpa. All right, it's like you're done.
Yeah.
So what was
it
about Siakam?
Because of that.
Well, what was it about Siakam where you went like, hey, like you just said the thing about Siakam where you went like, I told him right away, and like clearly he has like just this physical ability, like the speed, the athleticism, the quickness. There's some of them like it's just like, you know, you could step into a gym with him for a second, but a lot of guys in the NBA have that, right? Like it's the league of the greatest athletes on planet Earth. So what was it about Siakam where you went, okay, no, this is you are that corner three away?
Yeah, so obviously the first thing, like you said, the skill set, the athleticism, like you don't call a guy peace skills for no reason. Like he had so many things in his bag that, like, across the board, he could do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. He could play guard positions, play different positions, handle the ball. So it's like, how do we continue to grow these things without taking away from his mentality of doing all these things? Because, you know, sometimes you get to a point, like, if we tell him you need to be a better shooter, you just start shooting threes in all the games. Like, you go out to 8 threes a game, you stop being aggressive, stop going to the rim, you stop rebounding, you stop doing all these things because your mindset is on, well, they want me to be great at this. And I think the biggest thing that you saw with him was just his mindset and his ability to take coaching and teaching, his eagerness to want to work. Like, there was nothing you could ask him to do that he wasn't like – he didn't find a way to understand how that added to his game. He never took things for like, nah, I don't need that. I'm really good at this. Like, that was the biggest thing. He was so eager to want it and to want to do these things that you're like, oh, well, here, try this too. And he'd get it in 2 days. He'd be like, okay, try this. He'd get it in 2 days. So, like, it's like, oh, well, you're going to be an all-star. You know?
Yeah,
like, you're going to be a leader.
I'd imagine that's addicting, too, once things start to click and you show that capacity to add more to your game that you want to just keep working at and working at it. You know, you've been away from the Raptors for a little bit now, but I know you stay close to these guys. You stay close to the team. You've still been around the league with the Celtics earlier this year. The Raptors are in an interesting spot where – these guys who were, you know, your rooks or your sophomores. Fred just turned 28. Pascal turns 28 tomorrow. And yeah, they're young. Like, OG's still young, and Scotty Barnes and Precious Achiuwa have come in, and they're young as well. But this team is 44-32. They're in a playoff spot. What do you like from this team right now? And do you think, like, with Fred and Pascal at the top, this team is ready to be a threat in the playoffs?
100%, because you have guys that have been to the mountaintop that have the DNA, that understand the things that it takes to win. And then you have the youth of those guys where – so they're a threat. And guys – and other teams know this, because the youth of those guys is going to be the greatest weapon they have for 10 minutes, and then for 3 or 4 minutes is going to be the worst thing about them, like, in a playoff game, because there's so much inexperience. But, like, the energy and the eagerness that I talked about with Pascal that you can see in Scotty Barnes, like, you can see that same – enthusiasm for the game is dangerous, because, like you said, that addictive feeling to adding things to your game, or understanding that, oh, I am big and strong and I can do these things, and I can do these things every night. I am confident, because that's what all this is about at the end of the day, is just confidence, and confidence comes from repetition. So the more they play, the more minutes they get, they're not going to be afraid of the moment, because you got three guys who've done they've quote-unquote impossible. They won the ring. So you got guys that can steer the ship. We just need you to be steady. We just need you to bring that energy and play hard. We'll figure everything else out. And that's what makes them dangerous, because those kids got nothing to lose. I'm 20. How old is Scotty Barnes? I'm 20.
20.
20? I'm 20 years old, having the time of my life, going into the playoffs, playing basketball, and I'm going to play against the guys I've been watching for the last 10 years. I'm licking my chops, you know, like I don't lose either way. If I'm Scotty Barnes, like, I give it everything I got and I go home. If I lose, I go home and I take everything from the losses, and I come back next year with so many more things to add to my game. If I win, I know that I have a lot of things, and now it's like, how do I stay on top? So you gain in every way for him. And I think that's one of the best spaces to be in basketball.
So Kyle Lowry's here on Sunday with the Miami Heat. I think, obviously, if that were a playoff series, guys like Fred and Pascal and OG would get a kick out of it, getting to go up against Kyle. And maybe that dials the intensity up another notch. I know that's a team that you've watched a little bit this year. I know you spent some time with Boston earlier in the season on one of those hardship fill-ins. You obviously, you know, Philly and Milwaukee are teams we see all the time and have been mostly the same. When you look at those top teams, is there a team that you think the Raptors match up against best, or even just like as a basketball fan, one of those teams that you'd love to see the Raptors against in a playoff series?
So I'd love to see them play anybody, because of the length and the athleticism and the like, when I was at the Spurs game, you see them play a lineup with Freddie and then Ford, 6'7", 8'6", 9 guys, like, all long, athletic, handle a little bit, shoot a little bit, do a little bit of everything guys. And it's just like, man, that's a nightmare for another team. The only team I think that gives them the super problem is Philly, right? Because you got Joel Embiid, who is just, I don't think there's anybody of that capacity on that team that can handle that load. You know what I mean? Like, the size-wise of with him just down on that block, that's just a big guy. But I think the other teams, they find a way. Like, Nick is a master at throwing out different things and not being afraid to experiment. He might even rock his own boat just to make sure they're even more unstable on the other side. And I think that's a dangerous thing also, when you got a guy who's not afraid to do those things and he has all these tools to work with.
CJ, you mentioned those giant lineups. You're 6'6" or 6'7". Do you ever think that the NBA would get to a place where you'd be the smallest guy on the court in some lineups if you're still on this roster?
So when I came in the NBA, like, the fours were – like, I'm a four now a lot of the game. Like, you know what I mean? My size. Like, the fours – we're talking, like, Carlos Boozer. We're talking Ike Diagos, and these are just people off the top of my head. We're talking massive 6'9", 260-pound guys. 270-pound guys. We're talking all – there's no chance that there's a five playing that's not almost 7 feet. There's no – that's never happening on the basketball floor when I come in the league. And then Golden State happens. No, yeah. Then Phoenix happens. Phoenix happens, and then Golden State happens. So Phoenix happens with Sean Marion and just Amari. D'Antoni, Amari. Amari is a freak of nature. He's not as small, but he just moves like he's small. But that happens, and then everybody's like, well, we can't win if we play the way we're playing. And next thing you know, and it's the evolution of the game. The kids that watch the game, they come up, like the Scotty Barnes, they come up watching guys that play with a skill set, not big guys that play on the block and play. And it's like that's how the game changes. Like, there'll be another Shaq after seeing guys like Embiid dominate the game. So now big guys will start to play that way. But right now, everybody thinks to pick it up is to have a multiple skill set type of game, which it is.
Yeah, it's great. And you know, the one limitation is maybe, you know, some of these guys with spacing and shooting and things like that. But that's where guys like CJ Miles come in, where you're 6'6", you got some size, and you could shoot the hell out of the ball. CJ,
yeah,
really appreciate
you. You have a job forever.
Yeah, exactly. Really appreciate you taking the time this morning, man, and, you know, hope to see you around again. And if not, enjoy the playoffs.
Yes, sir, man. Thanks a lot. You guys be safe.
CJ Miles, former Raptors guard, former Trader who played for the Boston Celtics for 2 minutes earlier this season, and all around good guy, part of that bench mob unit. And yeah, like you said, he saw some of this and encouraged some of this with Fred and Pascal. But I think the biggest note there is, you know, what he said about Kyle still there. Kyle Lowry's returning on Sunday, but Kyle Lowry hasn't left this franchise in terms of the way he affected those guys.
Yeah. And that, not only that, that it was the right time for those guys to take over. And that's what I guess, you know, we were trying to hit on earlier, is that you still have those moments where in your mind maybe you defer. That it has nothing to do with Kyle Lowry not doing everything in his power to make those guys or to put those guys into positions to succeed, or not being willing to sacrifice. Like, I'll never forget, even like, I know it's Kawhi Leonard, but he sacrificed for those players last year. But I'll never forget the way that when Kawhi came in, Lowry just immediately went like, all I do is get assists. Like, I just passed the ball. And then with Kawhi coming out of the lineups, empowering Siakam on the nights where it was the rest. Like, it was a masterful job by Lowry. Again, a guy that always wanted the best for his teammates. Held people accountable, but always wanted his teammates to thrive, succeed. Yeah, actually, I think, like, again, somebody that you can look at in other walks of life as, as an icon in that regard. But yeah, that it's just seems to be very clear based on this season that the organization did the right thing by also moving on. Like, you can do two things can be true, and that Kyle Lowry is still here in a lot of ways, but having him gone allowed those guys to take those pieces that he left to become the best versions of themselves. I love that interview. I thought that was great. I thought that was a lot of insightful stuff from CJ. It just dawned on me, though, this is random. This isn't exactly off of that. And do we know? So, was Scotty Barnes had like a huge growth spurt? Like, what was his, like, how was his ball handling so good at his size? Because he's so big and he looks so fluid in that body. Like, there's no awkwardness to him. And it's just kind of, I'm realizing that usually there's like a story with something like that, right? Where, okay, because it's not normal for him to be that body and 6 foot, like, not, like, even for tall guys, right? He's not just tall. He's a brick, you know what, house. Like, how did the, do you know that story, Blake? Like, how the ball handling is so evolved?
I think it's kind of what CJ said about the influence of the league. And like, we maybe sleep on that Scotty's only 20. So like, Scotty's the teams that he would have been watching while he's in high school and playing his formative basketball were like the Draymond era Warriors. And the NBA kind of became, and I remember Pascal using this term to me before too, is it became a bit of a why not development league. In terms of why box guys in, why not let Pascal Siakam run the break? Why not have Scotty Barnes handle the ball? And some of it was, you know, he didn't have like traditional point guard duties. Those Monteverde Academy teams were loaded, where he was like the fourth option on some of those teams. So he goes to Florida State and he's coming off the bench. But I think he's a guy who there's a natural feel for it. You know, he has a reputation as a hard worker. But I do think CJ's point about, this is what guys have been told the last 4 or 5 years is, you know, what gets you the league. And there was an era before that in CJ's era in Indiana. Like when the Raptors first signed CJ Miles, it wasn't as a two guard. Yeah. It was as, oh, he's a small ball four. He can play some three, because that era of basketball had been a lot of, oh yeah, shooting fours. And that's, you know, it was the era where tweener stopped being a bad term and it started being a good term. And now we're kind of at the next step of that.
Yeah,
at least in CJ's estimation.
I know, but I still think of like what he's talking about. I equate that more to shooting than I do ball handling, because ball handling as size has always been a beneficial thing. Like Magic Johnson running the point at 6'9" is something that we go back to the 70s. But hold on, like, just let me finish this thought. It's just simply that it's like the evolution to me more is like big guys shooting, but having a handle has always had a value to basketball. Like it allows you to get to your spots. I'm just saying with Scottie Barnes, it is a pretty unique thing that a guy with his physical stature and his size has ball handling to the point where, yes, the natural feel stuff that you mentioned is a huge element of letting him run point guard. But just like we've talked about this before, just with Siakam's development has been the growth of his ball handling over years of refinement. He didn't get there at 20. He didn't get there at 21. There was a point where you didn't want Siakam dribbling a ball. You wanted him running down the floor as fast as he could without it and catching an outlet pass. OG Anunoby is still at a point with his ball handling where, you know, he kind of has his bully moves, but it's not very fluid where he can just kind of cross you up and get to his jumper the same way off the dribble. Barnes just already has a different level of ball handling for a 20-year-old at that size, and it's never really been explained to me, like, what the inspiration for that was or what the actual build for that was like.
Yeah, and I think that it's, you know, you mentioned the Magic Johnson thing, but I think part of it is when Magic Johnson came along and did all that stuff, nobody told the next generation of kids, oh, you can do that. It's like, no, you're going to be a big man if you're that size. And we've kind of reached a why not
era. They're like, this is a one-off and a one in a million thing.
Right. It's like you can't tell a kid to be as physically dominant as LeBron or Giannis now. That kind of thing. So we're going to see Kyle Lowry on Sunday. The Raptors had the Magic tonight at 7 on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Raps Heats at 7 on Sunday. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'll be on the pregame for that one. Loaded weekend at Sportsnet. We've also got Leafs Flyers Saturday at 7. And World Cup draw will be revealed today at 11:30 a.m. Eastern. We'll have a special edition of the Fan Soccer Show from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern today with Shaw and Nazar from Sportsnet 650 to break down Canada's draw.
Why are we still on the air? What happened to our three-hour show?
Quickly, it was my aux cord today. You didn't get the theme, JD? I thought the Kanye one might help you.
I didn't get the theme.
In honor of April Fool's, all 8 songs today were songs that you finish the CD, you think it's over, you wait a minute. April Fool's, there's one more song left on the CD. Yeah. Secret songs, hidden tracks.
That's a great...
Okay,
we're never going
to get that one.
I was just going to say...
I thought Blink-182 and Kanye, those two would get JD.
Yeah. So the thing is, though, is I wouldn't have put it together with all the other ones. And so those two in isolation were too hard to get.
So
I loved it.
I ended with the Lauryn Hill one, which is the only hidden track to ever win a Grammy.
Ooh.
I thought maybe that one would hit a note as well.
You forget how much more you know about music history than us sometimes. Like, Blake is one of those, like, he's just like, I actually am an encyclopedia of knowledge in many regards. And he's like, what do you mean?
All
you
of the songs were exactly 4 minutes and 21 seconds.
That would have been cool. Except for we're doing that, I think, probably closer to 420. That's a couple weeks from now. All right. It's the Fan Morning Show. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week. Have a great weekend.